another new COVID-19 variant detected in South Africa. Meanwhile, the World Health Organization says the Delta variant is now the dominant strain in the Philippines. The Okta Research Group recommending a three-week hard lockdown in COVID-19 hotspots. And President Rodrigo Duterte defending his former economic advisor over his reported ties to government's biggest supplier of medical goods during this pandemic. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. For joining us. For those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, nice to have you with us today. We begin with news of a new COVID-19 variant with multiple mutations discovered in South Africa. The C.1.2 variant, as it's being called now, has already spread to most South African provinces and to some countries in Africa, Europe, Asia, and Oceania. But scientists have yet to determine whether or not the new strain is more transmissible or resistant to existing COVID-19 vaccines. The discovery of a new COVID variant comes as global deaths due to the virus breached the 4.5 million mark. The World Health Organization estimates the pandemic's overall toll could be 2 or 3 times higher than official records. Here at home, the country set a new record for daily COVID-19 cases. On Monday, the country logged 22,366 new cases. Active cases stand at more than 148,000. There were also 222 new fatalities.
Whether the rise in the number of cases is due to the Delta variant or not, we need to recalibrate our response. Although we have seen the positive effect of the recent ECQ and NCR, which lowered the reproduction rate, humina ang hawaan of the virus, we are also evaluating whether granular or localized lockdowns would work best in our current situation.
The Okta Research Group recommends a three-week hard lockdown for COVID hotspots in the country. Professor Guido David says the country's pandemic curve has not yet reached its peak. He warns a single-day count of up to 25,000 new cases could be seen in the next 2 weeks.
Solution one, so, you know, mag-hard lockdown kayo tayo for 3 weeks. As in hard lockdown, as in you know, mobility, very
stop
restricted.
Stop lahat. Oo.
Well, pwede naman hindi stop lahat. Baka may, baka may mga highly essential workers, syempre mga healthcare workers na lumalabas pa rin.
That's one. Okay, two?
That is one. Two is we won't stop it. Sasalubungin na lang natin siya. Kanya-kanyang ano na lang. You know?
Matira matibay.
Obviously, kung sasalubungin natin, maabot natin yung ganyang levels, posible magka-mass graves tayo. I mean, hindi natin ginugusto yan. Sinasabi na natin dahil yan yung nakita natin nangyari sa ibang bansa.
The UP Pandemic Response Team has the same projections. Dr. Jomar Rabahante says their simulation shows cases peaking in late September or early October before going down. He expects the country's total caseload to reach 3 or 4 million by year end.
Ito din pong projections namin, meron din po kaming nilagay ilang mga ICUs. Doon po tayo sa NCR, may scenarios kami na sakto pa ang ating mga ICUs, pero may mga cases din na posibleng ma-overwhelm talaga yung ating mga hospital. Sa national naman, ito po yung tinitingnan natin na medyo delikado kasi posibleng lumampas sa number ng mga ICUs natin.
The COVID-19 Delta variant is now the dominant variant in the Philippines. The World Health Organization says more than 70% of the current transmission in the country is attributed to the Delta variant.
With this kind of transmission, with these kinds of numbers, we are in community transmission.
with the Delta variant. This is not entirely surprising. We know that the Delta variant, because of its higher transmissibility, will replace the wild type or the other variants of concern. And so what we are seeing here in the Philippines is not unique. That's been seen in many other countries.
President Rodrigo Duterte defends his former economic advisor who reportedly has ties to the Philippine government's biggest supplier of medical goods this pandemic. In a Senate probe, Michael Yang was linked to Farmily Pharmaceutical Corporation. The firm bagged some 8.68 billion pesos worth of deals for pandemic response last year. But the president sees nothing wrong with the transactions.
Michael Yang has been in business here in the Philippines for 20 years. Nag-umpisa yan dito sa Davao. Akala ko ba we are inviting investors? That's why I went to China several times to ask them to help us. Investments, yung pera nila, ibuhos mo nila dito para magkaroon tayo. Ako ang nag-otos kay Duque. I want it done immediately. Sabi ko sa kanya, wag mo, it's not one month, two months. It's 1 day, 2 days ka lang. Ako ang nagsabi sa kanya, I am sure, ito yung word ko, reviewin niyo yung tape. I am sure there is a law which would exempt you from bidding. Hindi na kailangan mag-bidding. Mamadali ang to, pandemic eh. Lahat tayo nakatago sa bahay. So, ang minabuti ni Duque, nag-bidding pa rin.
The president warned the Senate he will not allow his cabinet members to attend its inquiries if its members continue to grandstand. Duterte also pointed fingers at the past administration. He accused the administration of the late President Noynoy Aquino of buying overpriced PPEs.
Nagbili na ang past administration niyan. Hindi pa kasi sadsara ng pandemic. 1,700 lang ang bili natin. Itong last administration, nandyan yung papel hanggang ngayon, COA. Hindi kayo nagtaka na nung administrasyon, nung dumaan, nagbili 3,500.
President Duterte also tells the Commission on Audit not to release the preliminary results of their audits of government agencies to the media. Duterte says this disrupts the work of his cabinet members. The president also claims many COA employees have been charged for bribery and for falsifying documents.
Why don't you publish the number of criminal cases filed against employees of the auditing office, itong GAO, General Auditing Office, involving corruption also. Mas masahol yung ino kasi bribery. Tinutulungan pa ninyo mag-falsify, mag-fraud.
Senator Panfilo Lacson says President Duterte is now in panic mode. That's after the chief executive again slammed the Senate probe on the spending of the health department's COVID-19 funds. Lacson believes the president is attacking the Senate because they are closing in on Malacanang's possible links to anomalous transactions. Lacson maintains the Senate will not be silenced. Earlier, Senate Minority Leader Franklin Drilon described the questionable procurement of pandemic items as premeditated plunder. That's after they discovered a firm with only 500,000 pesos in capital was able to bag around 8 billion pesos worth of contracts.
I believe that the key to this whole controversy, we have to look for the missing link. Who is the backer of Mr. Lau? Who is the backer of Pharmaly? Why did this happen? So we can connect the dots once we find this common link.
As for the chair of the Blue Ribbon Committee, Senator Richard Gordon says he forgives President Duterte for his personal attacks against him. ABS-CBN News has unearthed more details about Pharmaly, the firm at the center of the Senate's probe on allegedly overpriced medical supplies. Our very own Warren de Guzman now joins us on the line with that story. Warren, go ahead.
Hi, Carmina. Here's what we know based on the documents of Pharmaly from the Securities and Exchange Commission. And the company was registered with the Philippine SEC in September 2019 with a certain Huang Tsu-yen, a Singaporean national, at the helm. The SEC documents were actually inconsistent, as there were some entries where Huang Tsu-yen was listed as a Filipino. Huang Tsu-yen controls 40% of the company, contributing 250,000 pesos of Pharmaly's total paid-up capital of 625,000 pesos. The next biggest shareholder is Filipino Mohit C. Dargani, who sits as Pharmaly's corporate secretary and treasurer with 30% control. Filipino Lincoln Ong controls 16% and sits as a director. Twinkle D. Dargani has 10% control and sits as Pharmaly president. Justine Garrado has 4% control and also sits as a director. The company has its head office based in Taguig. Its primary purpose of business is the selling, distribution, and marketing of pharmaceutical products, including machinery and equipment, and electronic nicotine delivery systems. Its purpose also includes the entry into contracts for the import, purchase, and acquisition of pharmaceutical products and machineries and equipment for its own account as principal or as representative of manufacturers or merchandise brokers. Based on the latest audited financial statements of Pharmaly Pharmaceutical, the company's total assets jumped from just under 600,000 pesos in 2019 to 284,887,883 pesos as of the end of 2020. Now, based on the audited income statement, the company went from zero revenues in 2019 to nearly 7.5 billion pesos in 2020. Net income hit nearly 265 million last year from a net loss of 25,550 pesos the year before. The financial statements did not give a breakdown of the merchandise sold. Analysts and economists we spoke with were reluctant to comment on the matter considering the allegations against Pharmaly. However, they noted that the high revenue level is unusual and irregular for a company with such low capitalization. But this is not by itself illegal. And that's the latest we have on Pharmaly from the SEC. Carmina, back to you.
Yeah, but Warren, when you look at the power and functions of the SEC, part of that is regulating, investigating, or supervising the activities of persons to ensure compliance or the companies registered with the SEC. Will the SEC at the very least look into Pharmaly?
As of this moment, I understand that Pharmaly has complied with the regulatory requirements under the SRC. They don't offer investments and they've registered with the SEC. They have the documents updated as of 2021. The general information sheet is also updated as of last year. But if we look at what's going on with regards to the procurement, that is what the crux of the matter is really, and whether or not the company actually has the track record to have been able to garner contracts that it was able to get from government. Now, we've been trying to look into the actual incorporators of the company itself. We've been looking and checking if they are members of the reputable business groups and organizations here in the Philippines. We know for a fact that they are not members of the Management Association of the Philippines, but we're still trying to get more information regarding the company from other business groups. We were also able to reach out to the MECO, which is a group of Filipino business owners and businessmen based out of Taiwan, regarding Farmally. Farmally, for the record, MECO has been able to vet certain companies upon the request of the administration. They've done this in the past in 2017 when a Taiwanese national was had sought audience with President Duterte for a possible industrial zone in Pangasinan, and they warned against it. However, regarding Farmally, we were told by MECO that no such request was made by the Duterte administration of MECO.
Hmm. Warren, when you talk about the SEC, though, what would make them investigate this company? We've been hearing a lot about it, obviously, because of the Senate probe. Is that something that the SEC would look into? Is that sort of enough reason for the SEC to look into Farmally?
Well, there'll be if there are any violations regarding the SRC or the Securities Regulation Code, and that would be the cue for the SEC to look into them. But again, they've been able to provide us with all of the information of Farmally, and as far as the SEC is concerned, the regulatory requirements are up to date. The audited financial statements are as of last year and submitted as on May 2021, and it's duly registered with the SEC. So I guess if they are prompted by lawmakers to look into them further, they might do some digging. However, again, as noted, and they've given us the information and the regulatory requirements for reporting for corporations operating in the Philippines have been satisfied as of now.
All right. We're going to have to leave it at that. Our correspondent there, Warren de Guzman, joining us on the line. Thanks again, Warren. Take care and you keep safe. Right now, we're about to show you live shots from the city of Manila where protest actions of healthcare workers continues. This time, frontliners from the Dr. Jose Fabella Memorial Medical Center are holding a noise barrage to protest the delay over the release of their COVID-19 benefits. They're also calling on Health Secretary Francisco Duque III to resign. Health workers from the Research Institute for Tropical Medicine, or RITM, well, they're also holding a protest. In an interview on DZMM, St. Luke's Medical Center Employees Association warned health workers in the country will not stop protesting until they receive their COVID-19 benefits. The latest from the budget department is that they've already given the funds to the DOH. We do know that the funds are now with the health department and that it is now the ball is now on their court, really, to disperse these funds to the healthcare workers. But even with the funds, the $311 million worth of funds, we hear from health workers that this is still not enough. Of course, their long-standing cry has been that the benefits that will be given to the health workers will not only be for COVID-19 health workers, but also for everyone. Because we do know that this pandemic has really disrupted the entire health care system in the country. So that is also one of their battle cries. Give not only to the healthcare workers, but to every single health worker that has been working in the health system despite not being in the COVID ward or COVID facilities of various hospitals in the country. We will continue to update you on the protest actions currently being held in the city of Manila. We also know that come Wednesday, health workers have also warned that there will be bigger protest actions that will be seen. All right, moving on. The health department now assuring pandemic frontliners it is working to speed up the distribution of their benefits. Health Undersecretary Maria Rosario Vergere cites the validation process for special risk allowance beneficiaries as one of the main reasons for the delay. She explains under the law, health workers directly catering to COVID-19 patients are the only ones who can receive the SRA.
You still need to validate, ito po ba ay nakakomply dun sa sinasabi ng batas na meron tayo para hindi rin naman po kami napupunta sa alanganin. Isa ho sa clinag sa amin ng COA dito sa mga sinasabing mga pera na ito, one of our regions gave everybody dun sa kanilang healthcare workers, non-COVID, COVID. They were flagged. Sinabi, hindi qualified yan, ba't mo binigyan?
Ferreira adds they are still looking for funds for the meals, accommodation, and transportation allowances of frontliners.
Yung ibang ospital namin, hindi sila makagamit, no? Because there are these processes na ang hirap mag-contract ng hotel, tapos nagbibigay sila ng pagkain sa healthcare workers, but healthcare workers, parang sinasabi nila, hindi naman kami nakakakain sa oras, so sometimes napapanis and all. So ang nangyari, patapos na kasi yung taon, matatapos na rin yung validity ng pera, binalik ng ospital namin yung pera sa amin. So what we did, we wrote the Office of the President. Kasi nagsulat kami sa DBM and Office of the President para lang masabi natin, let's convert this to a cash equivalent na lang so that our hospitals can have more flexibility in providing this. And that was approved by the President last June 1.
The budget department says it is ready to disburse more funds for the payment of COVID-19 benefits to frontliners, but Undersecretary Rolando Toledo notes they can only do so upon the request of the health department. Toledo also insists public funds are not being used for political purposes.
Do sa ating GAA, if I may, lahat po nakaalaan na po kung saan gagamitin. Where are we going to use that funds for a specific purpose, activities and projects? We call it PAP. So I don't think we can use that for political purpose, for election purposes.
I'm going to take a break now. Up ahead, President Rodrigo Duterte again says his daughter, Davao City Mayor Sara Duterte, is not running for president next year. More on that when we come back. You're watching Dateline Philippines here on ANC. We are back. You're still with Dateline Philippines here on ANC. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. Another new COVID-19 variant detected in South Africa. Meanwhile, the World Health Organization says the Delta variant is now the dominant strain in the Philippines. The Okta Research Group recommending a 3-week hard lockdown in COVID-19 hotspots. And President Rodrigo Duterte defending his former economic advisor over his reported ties to government's biggest supplier of medical goods during this pandemic. Back with more news, a mayor in Bulacan denies he broke health protocols during what appeared to be his birthday celebration. Photos uploaded online on Monday show Obando Mayor Edwin Santos celebrating with around 20 people. But Santos insists he did not plan the gathering.
Hindi po gatherings yun kasi hindi pa naman po birthday eh. Wala naman po kami sinusuway kasi wala naman po kami sineselebrate. Kaya lang po, hindi po may iwasan na ikaw po, pag mahal ka ng tao, pupuntahan ka. Eh hindi naman no, ako nakaready, hindi ko naman alam yon.
Flag carrier Philippine Airlines banned in Hong Kong for 2 weeks after imported COVID-19 cases were traced to one of its flights. But as our correspondent Jackie Manaba tells us, the passengers reportedly presented negative COVID-19 test results before boarding their flight.
A day before Hong Kong opens its doors to vaccinated workers from the Philippines, it banned the country's flag carrier, Philippine Airlines, from bringing in passengers for 2 weeks or until September 11. Hong Kong recorded 7 imported COVID-19 cases Sunday. Out of these cases, 3 were passengers of Philippine Airlines flight PR-300, 2 Filipinos, and 1 Chinese national. The Philippine Airlines explained through a statement that the passengers presented a negative COVID-19 test result before they checked in. They also insists strict health and safety protocols were implemented throughout the flight, including the use of HEPA filters to cleanse cabin air from bacteria and viruses. The group Bayan, based in Hong Kong, says the 2-week flight suspension will affect Filipino workers. The group adds the workers bound for Hong Kong already experienced a difficulty booking a flight with the limited available slots amid the travel restrictions.
Konti lang. So, yung mawalan ka ng isang airlines na allowed to bring in passengers, malaki ang impact. In fact, meron na ako kaninang isang, ka-exchange ko ng messages, no? Isang kababayan natin. At ang sinasabi nga niya, parang third time na niya na nakancel ang flight via PAL, no? So, at so stranded na talaga siya dyan, no? Tama, 3 times na. So, yung visa niya, nag-worry siya kasi baka mamaya ma-expire na bago siya makakuha ng another chance, no, to come to Hong Kong. So, I hope din talaga na magawa ng paraan at hopefully yung ating government can make some representation dito sa Hong Kong.
Affected passengers may refund, rebook with waived fees, or convert their tickets into a travel voucher. Philippine Airlines flies twice a week to Hong Kong despite the ban. The flag carrier said its all-cargo flight will continue. Jackie Manabat, ABS-CBN News.
American visitors subject to tighter COVID-19 protocols in Europe yet again. Details in this report.
Looking to take an end-of-summer trip to Europe will need to take a closer look at restrictions before they travel. After the European Union on Monday took the U.S. off the EU's safe travel list as U.S. cases and hospitalizations climb. That means U.S. visitors are likely to face tighter controls in certain countries, such as COVID tests and quarantines. The list seeks to unify travel rules across the bloc, although it does not bind individual EU nations, which are free to determine their own border policies. Already, some EU countries, such as Germany and Belgium, categorize the United States as red, requiring tests and quarantines, while for neighbors France and the Netherlands, the United States is classified as safe. At the start of summer, when the European Union opened up travel to U.S. visitors, the average daily COVID cases were about 40 cases per million people. Now, that number has risen to more than 450 per million in the week to August 28th, according to figures from Our World in Data. Despite EU appeals, Washington still does not allow European citizens to visit freely. The bloc itself has been divided between those concerned about the lack of reciprocity and increased U.S. cases, and others more reliant on tourism and reluctant to restrict U.S. travelers. The United States wasn't singled out. Israel, Kosovo, Lebanon, Montenegro, and North Macedonia were also taken off the safe travel list.
In other news, President Rodrigo Duterte again denying his daughter, Davao City Mayor Sara Duterte Carpio, is planning to run for president next year. Duterte reiterates his daughter has no interest in succeeding him. The president also mocked the opposition. He says they have no one worthy to pit against him in the vice presidential race.
Sabi ni Mayor Sara Duterte, eh, hindi siya magtakbo. Pero sabi ko, magtakbo ako ng vice president. Bakit? Walang oposisyon eh. Hindi man manalo yung oposisyon eh. Sigurado ako, yung utso diretso ulit na naman yun. Walang pinakita sa Pilipinas eh.
Mr. Duterte also revealed Senator Aimee Marcos is eyeing a possible bid for the vice presidency. He says Marcos visited his daughter in Davao City to discuss her plans. But in a text message, Mayor Sara Duterte Carpio said the supposed meeting with Senator Marcos never happened. PDP Laban's Pacquiao faction lauds Senator Bongo's decision not to run for president next year. Newly elected Vice Chairman Lutgardo Barbo finds the move logical. He claims the party members had reservations about Go being PDP Laban's standard bearer.
I think I should commend and congratulate Bongo for coming to his senses. He knows that he is only a creation of President Duterte. And perhaps he knows that within the ranks of the hijacking party or the wing of COSI, I think he's not that well accepted. Many of them are for Sara.
Barbo, meanwhile, threw shade at the Dutertes. He says Senator Manny Pacquiao is the party's best bet for next year's polls.
I think we had enough of so-called intelligent leaders. We need some leaders, national leaders, who should be true to themselves, true to the people, sincere, and hindi magnanakaw, at hindi magsisinungaling, at hindi magjojok-jok. And hindi magkakaroon ng policy na kill, kill, kill.
Illegal and unconstitutional, that's how the founder and vice president of the Natives of Boracay and business stakeholders described the return of casino operations on the island. The group says the lifting of the ban on casinos in Boracay violates the Local Authority Act of 1991.
If you are going to read the whole bill, it's not respecting the local rights of the host communities. Therefore, our land rights and our residency is not being respected. It's very threatening to our constitution, because if it can happen in Boracay Island, it can happen to other tourist destinations as well. It's very wrong to have Boracay as a sacrificial lamb, because this government have failed to address the COVID-19. They are talking about rebranding the island as a tourist destination, as a family oriented tourist destination, and they've been prohibiting parties, big parties in the beach, and then now they are allowing this big casino.
As for the Philippine Amusement and Gaming Corporation, it says two casinos were issued provisional licenses before Boracay's rehabilitation in 2018, but it notes none of them were able to open even after President Duterte lifted the ban on new casinos due to pandemic restrictions. One of them is still at the planning stage. For one lawmaker, the lifting of the ban on casinos in Boracay will only benefit President Duterte. House Deputy Minority Leader Carlos Zarate suspects the return of gambling there could be used to raise more election funds for 2022. He adds it will give Duterte's allies monopoly of casino operations. Zarate also says creating the Boracay Island Development Authority will put not just small businesses and indigenous peoples at risk, but also the whole province of Aklan. China's crackdown on gaming intensifies. It will now limit the gaming time of minors to just 3 hours per week. They will be allowed to play for 1 hour a day from 8 in the evening to 9 in the evening on Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays. They can also play for an hour on public holidays. China says the stringent rule is needed to curb the growing addiction of minors to online gaming. The crackdown reverberated around the world. Shares of Chinese gaming stocks slid in the U.S., with NetEase falling over 6%. Shares of Prosus NV, Tencent's bigger shareholder, also fell in Europe. Going to take another break now. Still ahead, the Taliban celebrates complete independence for Afghanistan as the last U.S. troops leave the country. Stay tuned. This is Dateline Philippines here on ANC.
And we're back with world news. The Taliban declares independence for Afghanistan after the last American troops left Kabul, ending America's 20-year presence in the country. The U.S. on Monday completed the withdrawal of its forces from the war-torn country a day before the August 31st deadline set by President Joe Biden. The historic exit caps off 2 weeks of chaotic evacuations after the Taliban's takeover of Kabul forced Washington and its NATO allies into a hasty retreat. It also takes place after U.S. anti-missile defenses intercepted rockets fired at Kabul's airport. The Islamic State has claimed responsibility for the rocket attacks.
Well, I'll tell you, my dealing with the Taliban and the dealings of my commanders on the ground with the Taliban revolved around our determination to execute this operation and the very flat statement we made to them that if you challenge us, we're going to hurt you. And I think they recognize that. And for their own purposes, this is something they wanted to have happen too. I can't foresee the way future coordination between us would go. I will simply say that they wanted us out. I do believe the Taliban is going to have their hands full with ISIS-K, and they let a lot of those people out of prisons, and now they're going to be able to reap what they sowed.
Despite the end of its military mission in Afghanistan, the U.S. vows to exert all efforts to evacuate over 100 remaining Americans and anyone else who may want to leave the war-torn country. In total, over 22,000 have been airlifted from Kabul since August 14.
Our commitment to them and to all Americans in Afghanistan and everywhere in the world continues. The protection and welfare of Americans abroad remains the State Department's most vital and enduring mission. Additionally, we've worked intensely to evacuate and relocate Afghans who worked alongside us and are at particular risk of reprisal. We've gotten many out, but many are still there. We will keep working to help them. Our commitment to them has no deadline.
The U.S. has also suspended its diplomatic presence in Kabul. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken says their office in Doha, Qatar, will manage diplomacy with Afghanistan. The United Nations Security Council has passed a resolution calling on the Taliban to honor its commitments to allow Afghans and foreign nationals to leave the country. The resolution also calls for unhindered humanitarian access and the protection of human rights.
As Afghanistan enters the next chapter, it is imperative that the international community remain unified and resolute, including in holding the Taliban accountable for its commitments.
The resolution got the approval of 13 countries, with only Russia and China abstaining. Russia said it abstained because the draft ignored its concerns, including the lack of clear support from the international community for Afghanistan's recovery and security. Over in the U.S., Hurricane Ida leaves almost all of Louisiana without power. It's one of the most powerful hurricanes to strike the region. It toppled power lines, littered roads with debris, and flooded communities. At least one person is confirmed dead due to the storm, but authorities expect the death toll to rise. President Joe Biden has ordered federal assistance to bolster recovery efforts.
We've been working with the electric sector throughout the night and all day today to assess and understand the full extent of the damage. To accelerate the process, I've asked the Federal Aviation Administration to work today with Louisiana and Mississippi electric companies to authorize the use of surveillance drones to assess Ida's damage to energy infrastructure, while ensuring those flights do not disrupt aerial search and rescue operations.
Philippine Vice President Lenny Robredo escapes another COVID-19 scare. Robredo on Facebook shared she just received her negative test result, as she described this latest exposure as the closest call to date. Robredo went into home quarantine last week after a staff member tested positive for the coronavirus. Despite the negative result, the vice president said she will continue completing her 14-day quarantine. In sports, Lionel Messi made his much-anticipated debut for Paris Saint-Germain as the club played against Stade de Reims, the Argentinian forward who joined PSG from Barcelona on a two-year contract, came on as a substitute for Neymar. It was his first outing since winning the Copa America last July 10. But it was Kylian Mbappe's goal that stole the show and gave PSG the victory. Now, we're going to close the show as we began it. As we reported, the World Health Organization has announced the COVID-19 Delta variant is now the dominant strain of the Philippines. For more on that, we're now going to be joined by health reform advocate, Dr. Tony Lechon. Dr. Lechon, thank you for joining us today. Good afternoon to you and welcome to the program.
Hi, good afternoon, Carmina, and to the rest of the televiewers, good afternoon.
All right. Breaking news this afternoon, a Delta variant, now the dominant strain in the Philippines, the WHO saying there is now community transmission here in the country. We also know about the 22,000, more than 22,000 cases logged yesterday. What do we expect from here onwards because of all those facts that I just stated, Dr. Lechon?
I think the number will still increase this week. Perhaps it will increase by 25,000 based on the projections of the experts like the Okta Research Group and even Edson Guido. And perhaps if this will be unabated till September, this might actually rise to around 30,000 based on the Department of Health faster projections. Now that we see that right now the positivity rate is 27.9%, which is basically one in every four Filipinos tested will become positive. And you have a different variant, which is highly transmissible. And it would render ineffective the existing vaccines that we have right now. Then I assume that this number would increase in the next few days, given the other factors like low testings, low contact tracings, and of course, a very low vaccination rate for the country. And these are the factors that I put into the equation.
Yeah, Dr. Lechon, what will this mean for the health system?
Well, the health system will soon collapse if we will not be able to control. This is mainly because of the dashboard that we have every 4 o'clock in the afternoon. We see that it's in the high-risk level. At the national level is around more than 70% and even at the national capital region. Meaning to say, because of the increase in the positivity rate, more and more people are being tested and more people, because of the low testing, will become positive and they will go to the hospital. And because of this, the deaths will also increase and also the number of hospitalizations will also increase. And also with the current system that the healthcare workers are right now not inspired because of the unobligated funds and the delay in their benefits, the special risk allowance, the hazard pay and everything, this would actually aggravate the whole system.
Dr.
So it's a perfect storm, Carmina. It's a perfect storm at this point in time. And you have the Congress and the Senate investigating the $67 billion fund deficiency in the Senate. And you have problems at the DOH level. I'm calling this a perfect storm. And this would actually be deteriorating in the next few weeks if we will not actually handle this situation very well.
Yeah, and you call it a perfect storm. And I've heard at least one expert who has said that it may just lead, with the numbers and the facts that we just stated, that this scenario may just lead to mass graves if things go unabated. Do you share that concern, Dr. Lechon?
I share that same concern. Basically, of the different experiences that we have seen in India and Indonesia, but given that they have good leadership and governance system like in India, it used to be 400,000 last April. Now it's down to 40,000 a day. Mm-hmm. And Indonesia yesterday, according to Edson Guido, we registered 22,000, but Indonesia registered just around 5,400. So basically, the epicenter in the Southeast Asia is not anymore right now in that particular situation. And we are right now being in a position to be the epicenter if we will not be able to control this particular situation.
Talking about controlling this particular situation, the Department of Health had weeks in terms of lead time to prepare for the eventual disbursement of the healthcare workers, SRAs, and other benefits. And yet you hear from the health department now that, number one, they're still lacking funds, and number two, there is a delay because of the process. What are your thoughts on that, Dr. Lietchon?
Well, the two things will come into your mind. The first one is actually the lack of the sense of urgency. And basically, this is important in leading change. The second attribute is the lack of vision. We should be forward-looking. I mean, if you're the head of the health department, the number one factor that we always consider is actually to protect the healthcare workers. And we're the number one exporter of nurses in the world. We're right now, you know, considered as one of the best in the world. And I really don't blame our nurses if they will seek greener pasture because of this current demoralization. And of course, as you can see right now, yesterday was a prime example as we celebrated the National Heroes Day. And considering our national hero is also a physician, Dr. Jose Rizal, it is right now a confluence of all the things that's happening for the healthcare workers. Mm. I mean, it's a sorry state, I would say, that the genuine heroes are really forgotten. They are overworked, they're overburdened, and they are ignored, and they're underpaid.
They're all that, Dr. Lietchon, and yet there is an advisor sitting now with the IATF. He is Dr. Teddy Herbosa. I'm sure you know him, who tweeted that basically greeting the healthcare workers yesterday, National Heroes Day. Sabi niya po dun sa tweet niya, maraming salamat sa healthcare heroes. But then he also had a message that went with that tweet saying, except yung mga nagprotesta. This is a doctor who sits as an advisor in the IATF. What are your thoughts about what he just said?
Well, Dr. Ted Herbosa is my friend and is a descendant of the Jose Rizal family. I think we both share the same ideals, just like Rizal. But tweeting a statement like that on National Heroes Day, I would say, I'm sorry, Ted, but it's a very insensitive. It doesn't call right now for a very compassionate decision. And I think in this time and age, there's no wrong time to do the right thing. The best time really to advocate healthcare workers' pleas during the National Heroes Day. It's a tipping point. It's a moment that everybody would want to do. At yun ang moment na gusto ng mga healthcare workers para ipakita ang sama ng loob nila. Natama lang yan sa National Heroes Day. And I think, para sabihin sa kanilang yan na naghira for so many months already, some of them risking their lives, risking their health, tapos overworked sila and underpaid. I think that's the height of insensitiveness. And I'm sorry to say, hindi siya aligned with the values that we have set in the Hippocratic Oath as a physician.
And Dr. Lietchon, Dr. Herbosa also believes that the protest actions were instigated by people outside of the healthcare system. He also said in another tweet to those defending the protest rally yesterday, defending the protest rally, yesterday was our highest number of new cases at 22,000. The instigators, that's what he calls them, the instigators just put our healthcare workers at risk by this protest. So who really cares for HCWs? Please think about that. That's the tweet of Dr. Herbosa right there. Dr. Lechon, do you believe that there were instigators?
Well, if you see the social media post, 99% of Filipinos, not only healthcare workers, are against the management of this COVID pandemic system. I mean, leaders would always look at the solutions. But if there are leaders who think that way and will turn a blind eye, I don't know. I mean, the writings are very clear on the wall that we have a very bad COVID pandemic response. And to blame the marching and the protest of the doctors as a super spreader event is actually uncalled for. This is one moment that you celebrated it in order to voice out your opinion, voice out your sentiments, that you're being ignored by the government as well as the DOA secretary. Mabuti sana kung kulang ang funds. Meron namang funds. Hindi lang inintindi. At kung kailan pa kailangan utusan para bayaran sakalang ginagawa. Kailan pa nila yung gagawin pagka sila po ay namatay na at wala na silang pag-asa at nag-alisan na yung mga doktor. Kung meron nga lang din pagkakataon na makapag-marcha din, sasama din ako sa kanila kung may pagkakataon nga lang. Pero hindi mo sila may blame for doing that because matagal na sila naghihirap. At yan ay confluence at saka mga pent-up emotions na pinapakita ng bawat manggagawa na sa medical at sa nursing profession. It's about time that we listen to them. Nakakaawa naman at sila ang tunay na bayani, hindi ang mga bayani na nagsasabi ng mga balita na hindi totoo tungkol dito. Maging compassionate tayo at maging maunawain dahil ang bansa natin ay lugmok na at naghihintay tayo ng inspirasyon coming from people, particularly from the national government and also from the advisors of the national task force.
We're going to have to leave it at that. Health reform advocate, Dr. Tony Lechon, we appreciate you coming to the show and joining us this afternoon. Please take care. Continue to keep safe.
Thank you very much, Carmina.
And that'll do it for today. Thank you for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, Dateline Philippines podcast is on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Play back this newscast too on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on ANC.